WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Division of the Arts and Humanities at the University of Chicago, offering an interdisciplinary Master of Arts program in Humanities that provides individualized attention in a supporting community. The flexible curriculum allows students to focus coursework within a single department or engage with multiple disciplines, creating a uniquely tailored graduate degree. Applications now open for the April 30th deadline at humanities.uchicago.edu.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around to get updates on the latest stories happening right here in Chicago. But first, the Hulbert City Council in Indiana is moving forward with a proposed Amazon data center, despite the fact that many residents do not support the plan. The data center would be built on a massive site that's currently farmland, and it could break ground as soon as this spring. Residents speaking out say that they want officials to take a closer look at how the facility could affect water use and noise. We'll hear from folks who live and work nearby, and we'll learn more about legislation that could put some guardrails around the project. Before we dive In the Loop producer Linnea Dominic joins me now, because she produced the episode. Hey, Linnea, good to see you.
Hey.
So one of those people that we'll hear from in just a bit is Jennifer McQuaid, who owns Seven Gables Farm near to this site. You managed to catch up with her ahead of my conversation. What did you learn?
Yeah, I did. So she raises animals. She has horses, chickens. She also has about 12 acres of hay that she's growing, as well as a veggie garden. And she told me that she didn't actually know what data centers were a couple of years ago. And when she first heard about them, she was like, that should be fine. You know, it's a building with computers. I have computers in my home. No problem. But then she started learning about how much water data centers use. She started learning that the generators, the backup generators that they have, run on diesel and can be very loud. And she started to get really concerned. And she is worried about how this could affect the groundwater on her farm, could affect her animals. And she really feels like the process is being rushed, and she wants the city to slow down and give residents a chance to learn more about the potential impacts.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear you say that she had no idea what a data center was. And I feel like Jennifer represents so many of us.
Oh, sure. I mean, they've been around for decades. I didn't really know how long they'd been around before this.
We weren't talking about them like we are now.
Well, you know, they're different now because AI really relies on them and needs so many data centers. And so they're just proliferating in our region and across the country.
Yeah, and lots of folks have opinions about them.
They do.
Yeah, let's dig into some more of those perspectives. Thank you for joining.
My pleasure.
Now, I should note, Hobart City officials, including the mayor, declined to join the conversation. But I did extend the offer once again on air, and we've heard back. So it looks like we might be hearing from Mayor Huddleston very soon. At the table was Angelita Soriano, Hobart resident in Northwest Indiana, and Jen Walling, Executive Director for the Illinois Environmental Council. I'll start with you, Jen. We know that Virginia, it's got the highest number of data centers in the country, but the Midwest is increasingly an attractive destination. Why is that?
Well, I think the Midwest, we do have a lot of water. We need to be careful about water usage, but we have water. We have great transmission lines. We're the center of the country. And so people are really looking at the Midwest as a place to put these new large load users from big tech.
Yeah. Data centers, I mean, they go way back, right? Back to the 40s. But AI is kind of fueling this recent rapid growth that we've been seeing. Talk more about that and whether you think our region is ready for that type of expansion.
Yeah, I don't think we're ready right now, and it's causing some severe impacts already.
Why not?
Well, Illinois already there's somewhere around 195 data centers that are already in Illinois. Just to give you an idea of the peak power in the ComEd territory, which is the northern part of Illinois, right now, peak power in the summer is 24 gigawatts. ComEd says they have 28 gigawatts of data center applications on board. That's almost doubling the amount of power that we're going to use. 70% of new power is expected to come from data centers in the next several years. And these data centers, the hyperscale data centers, are using 1 to 5 million gallons of water a day. So I don't think we're prepared. We need to put guardrails in, and we need to put guardrails in and how these are sited. Mm-hmm. We have several environmental justice concerns that the city and the state are facing already. And if we're not doing this carefully, we're going to see pollution impacts in those communities worsen. We're not ready for this. We need to put guardrails in. We need to slow down and think about how this is going so that we, if we're doing it, we're doing it in a way that protects communities and public health.
Yeah, and we'll walk through some of those concerns that you just laid out, Jen. But Angelita, I want to bring you into the conversation. You live across from the site of this future Amazon data center in Hobart. So tell me, first of all, what's that like? and what is the area for folks who haven't been there? How would you describe the area? What does it look like?
Well, it's about 800 acres of farmland. Across the street, you have the subdivision that I live in. That's a newly built subdivision. You also have farms also across the street. It's a quiet neighborhood and something that we really don't believe that should be built there because it's not a light industrial project, and it's just not something that belongs in the middle of town. It's really the heart of the town.
Mm. Yeah, tell me more about your feelings on that. Is it more so about the length of time it will take to get this done, the noise in between, just the sight of it, right? It smack dab in the middle of town, as you've sort of described there.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, residents are speaking out because when you step back and look at the big picture, it's just not a light industrial project. It's massive 24/7 operations, and approvals are being done before the public has had a chance to meaningfully participate in the process. And that's our biggest concern.
Mm-hmm. And you are so concerned that you're part of a lawsuit, right, Angelita? It's about sort of how the city has managed the process.
Yeah, we did enter into a lawsuit, and it's just about the process where we haven't had a chance to provide input before approvals have been done. And it's that's been our last resort. Basically, we've tried to talk to the city, and they just haven't come to the table with us.
Any response from the city so far?
So far, no. We've asked for town halls. Approvals are this Thursday. Actually, is a fill permit meeting. Mm-hmm. And they're downplaying it to saying, oh, it's just moving dirt, right? No, it's you're breaking ground, and we still haven't seen a full site plan. They're telling us it could be up to 25 buildings. And so we're not even being told how many buildings, how many generators per building. None of that, and we just want meaningful public participation before approvals are done.
And I want to note for our listeners, Hobart City officials, including the mayor, were invited to join us for this conversation, but they did decline. So, you know, Jen, you're hearing these concerns. Obviously, they sort of rhyme with what you were just laying out, and the noise issue. The Environmental Protection Agency says problems related to noise. I mean, they're a big deal. It includes stress-related illnesses. We're talking speech interference, hearing loss, sleep disruption, lost productivity. Right? These are valid concerns.
Absolutely. I mean, there are big global concerns with data centers like energy and water usage. But if you're a neighbor of a data center, I also would be concerned because of noise and also diesel pollution. In Aurora, there's the CyrusOne data center that lost its connection to the grid for a few days. Neighbors said it sounded like jet engines. These can be 85 to 96 decibels just on a good day from the diesel generators. And it can be really noisy. And diesel generators as well are one of the worst types of fuel pollution. You get a lot of particulate matter. You get the odor and smell, different contaminants that are not good for your lungs. And so we're definitely really concerned when these go into neighborhoods. You know, they're looking at them as light industrial, and especially when the diesel generators are on, which does often have to happen, not just from emergencies, but other items. You know, they might need to run once a month. They need to have 99.99% connectivity to energy for these data centers.
Right.
And so they're going to need to turn those on at some point. And, you know, that's going to be the noise and the pollution.
Yeah. And something else we've alluded to, Jen, data centers use massive amounts of water.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, to cool the computers. It's hard, though, from what I understand, to track all of the water that is being used. Why is that?
I think that this whole issue is bringing a light on how our water usage in Illinois, we're not, we really don't have safeguards overall. So we often don't know, other than the Great Lakes Compact, how much water is being used, where it's coming from, et cetera. And with these data centers, it's just cooling. We do not need to use fresh, clean, treated drinking water. Many data centers are doing closed loop systems and having a lot of water efficiency. That should be the minimum. We should not be using our fresh, clean water, no matter how much we have in the Midwest. It should not be used for this purpose and so much of it.
Yeah. Well, In the Loop producer Linnea talked with Jennifer McQuaid. She is the owner of Seven Gables Farm, which is about 3/4 of a mile from where this data center will be in Hobart. And McQuaid's very concerned about water use.
We are all on wells, right? And that's really important as a farmer because you need to irrigate crops and feed livestock, water livestock. You go through a lot of water. And so if they dewater the water table for any reasons, whether it be, you know, to cool the data center when it's functional or just for construction purposes, that puts the viability of our farms at risk. We can't water our animals. We can't, you know, irrigate our crops. For a normal home, the city can say, well, we'll just run them city water. That doesn't work for farms, right? Like, it's cost prohibitive. So literally 130 of us that surround this area could, you know, our land could become non-farmable because of this.
Yeah, she goes on to say that many of these farms are part of agritourism, right? The, you know, the UPIC farms. She's concerned that this could eventually affect that industry. Your thoughts, Jen?
Oh, absolutely. When we're looking at especially well water, you know, you can easily dewater a well. You can have the cone that goes around where you're taking the water out of. And these data centers, whether it's Indiana or Illinois, they're not required to talk about how much water they're using, how they're getting it. All of these pieces that could really contribute to the farm's lifestyle. So all of those things are definitely a concern with water usage. Our aquifers are drying up all over. And, you know, in Illinois, Joliet is already looking at getting Lake Michigan water because the aquifer there is the levels are depleted.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to protect that water. We need to know where it's coming from. I think they should be getting a permit to even take any of it out, but they have to be required to be efficient with the water usage.
You're nodding, Angelita. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, independent studies need to be done to see what the true impact will be to, you know, to our water tables, to everything, our noise, health impact studies. And all of this needs to be done, but before approvals and guardrails we need to take it a step further, and guardrails need to be put in place so that the residents and the environment, the community is protected.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jerry Davich, who's a columnist for the Times of Northwest Indiana, interviewed Hobart Mayor Josh Huddleston. This was inside a local cafe last summer. Here's a bit of the conversation and the part where the mayor is talking about the data center project.
We can't live our lives without data centers. They're here to stay. And so how do we get them to play within our rules, make it better for our community? You know, there are people that just don't want things built in their backyard, and I have sympathy for them. I understand it. But at the end of the day, you know, we have to grow as a community. And I think as I'm willing to have conversations with anyone, get them to understand these data centers and get them on a different level than just the one topic that they get onto, whether it be water, power, aesthetics. And when we really peel back the layers of the onion, I think that these are a great benefit for our community.
So, Angelita, Mayor Huddleston is saying Amazon is going to pay $47 million up front, and it's money that he says is going to be used for infrastructure and to not raise taxes. But in your mind, right, as a local resident, how do you weigh that benefit against the potential concerns that we've been talking about?
I think receiving that money up front is it makes things even less transparent, right? You wonder if approvals are being done because the money was received. You're wondering if there are not enough guardrails put in place. I think we still, like I've mentioned, we don't have a site plan, and when that was proposed up to the council, we asked that they tabled that and that they receive the money after the site plan, after we've had a true opportunity to provide input to see the full scope of this project. And
at that point, do you think that you might be okay with this moving forward if you get the site plan and you're able to put that input in?
I think if we have enough input and we have those independent studies, like a noise impact study, a health impact study that proves that this is truly a light industrial project. Mm-hmm. But I personally believe that the 25 data center buildings it's not light industrial, and I would like us to meet in the middle and see how things could be possibly scaled back or we're not getting that.
And Jen, on that topic of data centers driving up electricity bills, right? Because that's a huge concern from a lot of folks across the country. We did get a statement from NIPSCO, which is the electricity provider in Northern Indiana, about how this Amazon data center could affect energy bills for those residents. Now it says it will be, quote, fully funded by the data center customer, not by NIPSCO's current customer base. Amazon will also pay a fee for the use of NIPSCO's existing electric system, with those dollars returned to NIPSCO customers as cost savings over the life of the agreement.
I mean, that sounds great, but it doesn't sound realistic or what's occurring in the United States right now. I think in Illinois, we've seen bills increase as of last summer that are directly related to big tech users. I think all over the country, folks are seeing affordability concerns, and it's directly related to the new large load users that are big tech. They are not paying for the energy that they're using. They're not paying for the new infrastructure that has to be built. They're not paying for sometimes keeping dirty, nasty fossil fuel plants online that shouldn't be online anymore. And for us, we've proposed a bill that we want folks to bring your own new clean capacity and clean energy. And mm-hmm. that's our acronym, Beyonce.
I noticed that.
So that is what we want data centers in Illinois to be doing. We shouldn't be keeping fossil fuel burning longer. Customers should not be paying for it. They need to be clean, additive, and paid for by the data centers themselves. And they should be contributing to communities. Many communities, you know, there's energy, but also many communities have water infrastructure issues. And they should be paying to address those issues, helping communities come into compliance with water laws, pay for the infrastructure to make sure that they're contributing to the communities where they're going.
So what you're talking about is your proposed Power Act, right?
Yeah, so we've proposed, we will propose a bill in the Illinois General Assembly called the Power Act that deals with environmental justice, energy and water from these data centers, making sure that there are guardrails in place, that there is transparency in public hearings. Mm-hmm. And Indiana is doing a lot of the opposite. It's state's legislature. There are some guardrails proposed, but they're also removing guardrails. They're removing mm-hmm. transparency. They're removing public hearings.
Yeah. I mean, Indiana legislators, you know, they're deep in debates over bills about these data centers and mostly focused on sales and tax use exemptions. There was an amendment to a 2019 law that basically says now data centers need to provide at least 1% of their sales tax savings to local governments. And if passed into law, House Bill 1333 would make it easier for companies to develop on land with less fertile soil, meant to protect prime farmland. Your thoughts on whether something like that would be effective as protection?
I think there needs to be way more. I think, you know, in addition to those, there's, you know, I think that the Indiana legislature just passed some things on rolling back some public hearings to mm-hmm. make things go faster for data centers. So I think we need to see way more guardrails go into place.
Step in the right direction, not enough.
Step in the right direction, not enough.
Yeah. Angelita, something else you're concerned with is the property value of your home. Do you think this could drive it up?
I think it really depends on how it's built, right? We've talked to people across the nation, and the biggest thing was how it looks and the sound. We've asked the realtors to give us their opinions, and they say right now everything is too new. Especially with these AI hyperscale data centers. Mm-hmm. But I believe now, given the nation's pushback, I think moving forward, home values could be driven down. Mm. Given the maybe not before all of this, some people didn't even know, well, what's a data center, right? But now, with the pushback, with the size, everyone's going to know.
Yes.
Everyone will know.
So in a perfect world, what's the input that you want community members like yourself to have in that design process?
I mean, I would like more protections in terms of the noise, the type of the generators that will be used. Scale it down. Do we really need 25 buildings? It's packed into one location. I'd also like to see an accountability group that is for the city. You know, a department possibly just handling the data centers or something. We need more transparency with our city officials. I think transparency, it's important when people understand things before approvals, not right after.
We've been talking with Angelita Soriano, who's a Hobart resident, and Jen Walling, who is with the Illinois Environmental Council. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Okay, now it's time to get into the top local stories of the day. At the table to help me break them down was Violet Miller, reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, Courtney Kippers, WBEZ's arts and culture reporter, and Claire Lane, WBEZ's Morning Edition anchor. The Cook County State's Attorney, Eileen O'Neill Burke, is taking a closer look at an executive order that Mayor Brandon Johnson signed this week. Claire filled us in.
The Cook County State's Attorney reviewing the legality of Mayor Johnson's most recent executive order, which, as you mentioned, regarding immigration agents. On Saturday, Johnson signed the ICE on notice order, which essentially directs the Chicago Police Department to pursue charges against potentially violent federal agents. The Tribune reporting this morning that the prosecutor's office's officials are reviewing the order for legality because it changes the process essentially for how felony charges are evaluated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, remind us, Violet, just a bit more about what the mayor's executive order does.
Yeah, so like Claire said, you know, it instructs CPD officers to, you know, document potential crimes by federal agents. In addition to that, you know, record them with body-worn cameras, other, you know, kind of devices that are given to them, just to create this kind of database of, you know, whether they're identifying, you know, supervisors on scene or just recording what's happening. You know, it's just more data for the city to work with for these potential prosecutions.
Yeah. We should note, too, that Johnson's policy chief says that prosecutors still have their own discretion on whether to file these charges or not.
Yeah. Relatedly, Claire, hundreds of CPS teens walked out of school. They were protesting ICE as well.
Yeah, even in the cold yesterday, Sun-Times reporting, we had a few reporters who covered this yesterday, students calling for the abolition of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency in its entirety, accusing its officers of targeting people based on their skin color. We all remember when Chip Mitchell got Commander Gregory Bovina to sort of admit to that on Chicago streets that they're racially profiling people during Operation Midway Blitz. But students from several Northside high schools huddled. This was in River Park, holding flags yesterday from the U.S., from Mexico, other countries, speaking about the positive contributions that immigrants have made to Chicago, to this city, and calling for, essentially for more young people to not be afraid to speak out.
Amazon is donating Ring cameras to Illinois domestic violence survivors. Get us caught up on that one, Claire.
Right. This is an initiative from Illinois' Attorney General Kwame Raoul, announcing this partnership between the Illinois Coalition Against Domestic Violence and Amazon's company Ring. The home security manufacturer supplied these ICADV with 1,000 Ring cameras that were distributed to domestic violence survivors specifically across the state. Mm-hmm. Raoul cited the partnership as a pretty important security measure that affords survivors of DV peace of mind before they open their doors.
Mm-hmm. Courtney, there's an update in the Senate candidate race. J.B. Pritzker's putting some skin in the game, or more skin in the game.
He got that money, honey.
That's right. Yes. I was going to say, the governor, who of course we know is a billionaire, doled out $5 million to his current Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton in her race for U.S. Senate. The Sun-Times reports that that donation was made through a pro-Stratton super PAC and is already being used to fund TV ads, so being put right to use. And we know that primary just has a couple weeks to go.
Yeah. Now, a victim of R. Kelly's abuse is coming forward, Violet. This is now right in time with her new memoir. Tell us more.
Yeah, so Roshona Landfield is, you know, released her book today. It documents, you know, not just the time before and the time after, but, you know, all through her time, you know, being abused by R. Kelly, through the trials, through all of this. And it really gives an insight into, you know, kind of the process of grooming and the situations that she and other young women who were, you know, in his orbit were put through at that time. And it also gets into, you know, parts of why she didn't testify at the 2008 trial, that, you know, she was being kept away, you know, a number of other details that just really opens up this case. I'll be honest with you. I read it in one sitting yesterday. You just can't put it down.
Tell me what captivated you most. I haven't read it yet, but I mean, just the interviews I've seen so far about her opening up about the fact that folks didn't believe her. I'm thinking of, you know, you being 13 years old, this highly powerful person inappropriately, you know, allegedly inappropriately touching you and doing all these things. You're going to family members. You're going to a famous aunt who is also an artist. And folks are second guessing a child, essentially. How does she write about that?
Yeah, so I mean, that was a big part of the book is her kind of reconciling with herself and also family, you know, talking about how she, in some senses, doesn't blame them for making the decisions they did while also, you know, wishing they would have stepped in more and made those decisions maybe better. And so, you know, I think that's really what pulled me in was just how personal it was and how strong her voice kind of shone through in the writing, in the sense that, like, she's really walking you through this with her, and you're really living through it, you know, in this memoir. And a lot of it is shared just for other, you know, survivors of this kind of abuse. The end of the book is literally just a note to other survivors and has resources for them. And so, you know, it seems that not only is she reclaiming her name because she's gone by nicknames for years, she's also, you know, putting herself out there to help others.
The initial Jane Doe.
Yeah. Yes.
In one of them.
Yeah, exactly. We've known her as Jane Doe for so long. We knew her story. We just didn't know.
I mean, she did her first public interview 2 days ago with Rolling Stone that we'll publish 2 days ago.
In which she said, "I'm very proud of myself. I've come a long way. A lot of cold nights, but I'm here today." So powerful.
And we should note, this was sort of a different time. You know, celebrities were a lot more accessible than they are now. I mean, as a product of the Chicago area, like R. Kelly would be at malls.
Yes.
You know, you could meet him. And so you're not just dealing with a person who is doing this to you, but a very well-known member of the community.
Right, who's got a lot of power. And it's funny to hear you say that, because I think in the age of social media, we have so much access now. You know, Courtney, I mean, you look at the celebrity life all the time with your Arts Beat. We have so much more access in that way than we would have in the past. But yeah, he was one that was, he was kind of a rare being. Just
came
out
to my
there.
High school.
Really?
I mean, it really was that type of thing. I mean, you played for people in your neighborhoods, right?
Mm. Jeez. Hey, if you just got here, welcome. This is In the Loop. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons. We are going behind some of the headlines you need to know today in the Chicago area with WBEZ's Claire Lane and Courtney Kippers, as well as Violet Miller from the Chicago Sun-Times. Claire, Chicagoans love a pregame activity. And it looks like our city's librarians are also getting in on this fun.
How'd you know that was one of my favorite words?
Yes.
Pregame.
Pre-game.
But yes, this is Bad Bunny, but keep it educational because it is Chicago Public Libraries after all. And in honor of the Super Bowl on Sunday, Chicago Public Library hosting a series for Chicagoans to learn more about Puerto Rican culture and Puerto Rican history ahead of, as we know, Bad Bunny's very looking forward to Super Bowl halftime concert. The series is called Puerto Rico and Bad Bunny Beats in History, kicking off at the West Belmont branch. First segment of the series is tonight.
Yes.
And then there is another session that will be held at Harold Washington main branch on Friday night. So if you're a Bad Bunny
Friday
super fan,
night.
Are you going, Court?
I honestly might. I love this so much. I think it's so sweet
is,
and endearing.
Are you pre-gaming?
Pre-gaming
Super
at
Bowl?
The library.
Yes. She would, with books. That's Courtney's jam.
Is anybody pre-gaming, like pre-gaming for the Super Bowl? You know?
I fully forgot it was this week.
I made a dinner reservation.
The Bears were out.
Violet.
I lost. I'm on baseball now.
Yeah, okay. I get you.
3 months of the day until 6 months of the day. I'm bad at math. Until Women's Professional Baseball League starts up.
Okay.
That's what I'm looking for.
All right. Well, you've redeemed yourself. But I'm kind of giving our engineer Ethan a side eye right now because that was a perfect opportunity to play some Bad Bunny. Perfect excuse for 9:13 a.m. Bad Bunny.
Poor Ethan.
Poor Ethan. He's like, I can't get anything right. Courtney, let's talk about Chicago Theater Week.
Yes.
First of all, what is that?
Okay, yes. It's Theater Week. It's kicking off Thursday. It goes through February 15th. So really, it's a little bit more than a week, a little extra here. But basically, tons of theaters across town participate. And it's kind of a way to get people, draw people in at a discount. People might take a risk on something that they might not see otherwise.
I love that. Any shows that you've got your eye on?
Ooh, I know you're talking to the Second City folks today. They've got a discount. There's
lots of
improv shows. You can still see, there's still tickets to Holiday at Goodman. That's an adaptation of this 1920s rom-com by Philip Barry. And then CSO, it's not just like plays, there's also classical music. And CSO has a series of concerts next weekend featuring this 15-year-old violinist.
Ooh.
Her name is Himari. She's from Japan, and she's sort of like this rising international prodigy. So chance to see her at a good discount.
Super cool. What's our colleague Mike Davis recommending?
Mike Davis.
You know, he's out there in the theater
enough
world.
Enough with you, Courtney. Moving over to Mike.
I know
Mike.
We couldn't get Mike yeah. here, but what's he saying? We really wanted to book Mike. But
next time.
He's busy. He's at the theater.
Our theater expert. Yeah, out there on the street doing it. He just reviewed Birds of North America, which is a Chicago premiere at a Red Orchid Theater, and Mike really liked that show. It's this generational play about a father and daughter bonding and the growth of their relationship, and they're into bird watching, so very wholesome stuff.
Very
here.
Wholesome. Very Mike. What other headlines are you watching, Claire?
Sasha likes Mike. Let's make sure that's on the broadcast. So still talking about sports, but we're doing basketball, I guess. It's basketball season now.
We're
March Madness
basketball?
Soon to be upon us, maybe, if you want to later. The Illinois Illini men's basketball team upset the fifth-ranked Nebraska. This was on the road on Sunday night. But now, with that win, the Illini have gone 11 victories in a row.
Okay.
It is their longest winning streak since 2012, which is kind of wild, and they are now fifth in the national ranking, so they might be dancing in
well
March.
Deserved.
TBD.
Well, we just mentioned Chicago Theater Week a moment ago, Courtney. I know you've got a story coming out. We should take the time to preview this one. This is about the world premiere of a new opera.
Yeah. It's an opera that premiered in Minnesota, in St. Paul. But the reason we're interested is it's all about Florence Price, the composer who did a lot of her work here in Chicago. She was the first Black female composer to have a symphony performed by a major U.S. orchestra. That was the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. So this new show is all about her life.
Oh, incredible. When does the story come out?
It'll be online this week. It'll be on air on Thursday. And it'll be in our arts and culture newsletter, Green Room. So check that out.
Okay. Lots of places.
All over.
Yeah. Before we wrap, Violet, people can still take part in Brookfield Zoo's annual tradition. Oh, gosh, this is a funny one.
For Valentine's Day.
Yeah, remind us what it is. I don't know. I feel like I hadn't heard about it until this year.
This is like a rite of passage story for new reporters, the Sun-Times. Somebody gets it every year. But you can name a Madagascar hissing cockroach after your ex at the Brookfield Zoo for a $15 donation. You got to do that by Thursday at 5 p.m., and they will put only the first name up on a board, but you can go see your ex's name next to a cockroach at the zoo, which is pretty cool. And I think they've got a lot of free admission this month. So, maybe something
petty,
to check
petty,
out.
Petty.
Amazing.
My kind of petty.
And it helps the zoo. So,
It helps the zoo,
yeah,
exactly.
It's totally the donation exactly. That's driving.
WBEZ's Claire Lane and Courtney Kippers and Violet Miller from the Sun-Times.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Linnea Dominic, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.